Welcome to Below the 10, a series about life in South LA. I'm David Weinberg, a reporter for KCRW in Los Angeles. Today, we bring you part two in our three-part series on gang violence. In part one, we introduced you to Michael Carradine, a lieutenant with the Los Angeles Police Department. He grew up in South Central and spearheaded the department's gang intervention program. This story is about Skip Townsend. He also grew up in South Central, but his life took a very different path. He ended up on the other side of the law from Officer Carradine. Skip became a member of the Rolling Twenties, a blood gang from the West Adams neighborhood. But today, Skip is one of Officer Carradine's closest allies in the fight against gang violence. Skip Townsend hears a lot of really terrible stories.
It's part of his job, creating a safe environment for people to come and talk about what they're going through. Like tonight, for instance. He's at a weekly meeting in the basement of a church at 35th and Normandy. At the front of the room, a woman named Kelly Dillon is telling her story. It's brutal and tragic. For years, her husband beat her badly, burned her with a clothes iron, and raped her until she couldn't take it anymore. At 19 years old, she shot and killed her husband and then spent 15 years in prison. But at the moment, Skip Townsend is not listening to her.
And when she starts talking, I can't take it. And that's what happens when people unburden themselves. A person like me, I'm soaking it up, and it affects me. So I have to disconnect.
In order to disconnect, he clings to this thought, like a man adrift at sea clutching a life preserver. He's afraid that if he lets go of this thought and focuses on Kelly's story, he might break down in tears. And the thought is this: what if Red Lobster sold pancakes?
What would a lobster pancake taste like? You know, so as I'm thinking this and going through whatever, I'm detaching myself.
As difficult as these group meetings are for Skip, they're a necessary part of his holistic approach to reducing violence. He also works with the Los Angeles Police Department as a gang interventionist. Interventionists are former gang members who act as first responders to violent crimes, trying to prevent retaliatory killings. They deal with people who are angry or grieving, young men proving themselves, mothers whose worst fears have been realized. It's painful, dangerous work, and the pay is terrible. Skip used to make really good money transporting cars for celebrities, but something didn't feel right.
I felt like I was doing something wrong. I was making money and I wasn't helping the community. So people in my community were still being shot. My children started gangbanging. My older kids started gangbanging, living the same lifestyle and culture. And at that point, I realized that this lifestyle is not about me.
Skip reached out to activists in the community who were working to reduce violence, and they became his mentors. He founded his own nonprofit, Second Call, which works to address the root causes of violence.
And it's much more rewarding, much more fulfilling. And I may not have a street named after me or a park bench or something, but I know that I have saved lives.
To understand how and why Skip saves lives, it helps to know a bit about him. He's tall, he wears reading glasses, he has a shaved head, and he can command a room when he speaks. But he's also a little goofy. He jokes and smiles a lot. As a kid, growing up in South Central, Skip was bullied a lot, mostly by older kids, many of whom were gang members. And one day, when he was 13 years old, he just had enough.
One of the older guys had said, just give me your money. Give me your money because the Crips are going to take your money. And when the Crips take your money, they're going to beat you up. So I got frustrated and said, man, I don't give a damn about the Crips. It's time for me to fight.
This was a big turning point in Skip's life. His decision to stand up for himself meant that from this point on, he would be labeled a rival gang member by the Crips.
Joining a gang wasn't actually joining a gang, signing up to, I want to be a gang member. It was just the commitment to fight back, the commitment to be a part of the community that wasn't going to be victimized by Crips. And it's just being willing and ready to say, I'm going to be the aggressor. I'm no longer going to be aggressed upon. I'm the aggressor now.
So how do you make that happen once you decide that?
Well, once I decide that I'm going to fight back, it's very simple. I just go to the mall because they're there. The Crips are there. And instead of turning my pockets inside out, showing them I didn't have any money. They had already took it all. At this point, when they ask how much money I have in my pocket, I tell them I got $1 million. Get it. You know, come get it. I got your money in my pocket. It's time for you to get it.
As a teenager getting into fights, Skip could hold his own, even against the older kids. And he developed a reputation for his ability to fight.
It becomes more like competition. We were younger, 13, 14, and everybody wanted to fight the best fighter. And as we got older, they started shooting each other, and it completely changed.
Skip dropped out of high school in the 11th grade, but he lied on a job application, said he had a diploma, and got hired in the mailroom of the real estate developer Kaufman and Broad.
About this time, 82, 83, the drugs really hit the community, and so many people were selling drugs and making thousands of dollars as opposed to me making $35 or $40 a day. So I immediately hit the street and started selling drugs. And that became my life, my downfall, and everything that dictated where I went after that.
At 17 years old, Skip became a full-fledged member of the Rolling 20s gang, a set of bloods from the West Adams neighborhood. He was in and out of jail for selling drugs and stealing cars, and he did this for over a decade, basically his whole adult life to that point. Then, at 34, he changed. He was arrested again, but this time it was big. He was facing 2 life sentences on an attempted murder charge he says he didn't commit, but he was held in jail for nearly a year.
Lost probably about 20 pounds going to jail. I went in with long black hair, came out with short gray hair. My father passed away. It was probably one of the worst times of my life. And as I said, knowing that I wasn't the person they said I was, but I still had some things that were in the closet, some things that had never been uncovered that I was wrong for doing. So I gave it to God and said, you know, this must be my fate.
At the trial, the victim testified. He said that Skip was not the person who shot him. 2 jurors still found Skip guilty, and the trial ended in a hung jury. Skip thinks it never should have been that close.
So when I saw that, I'm thinking to myself, what I want to do is protect myself and not allow myself to ever be in a situation where people who don't know me can make a decision, a permanent decision, on my life.
Skip quit selling drugs, quit stealing cars, stopped associating with the Rolling 20s, and he went back to school.
Went to Cal State LA. I went to Trade Technical College. I went to started taking the study of human behavior. I started studying my angry behaviors and why I was like that, and also started facilitating groups where it's just emotionally a safe environment for individuals to share how they feel. Then other communities found out, and before you know it, now we have 3 classes in the prison and 3 classes in the street and 1 in Pasadena, and we're just constantly growing.
In 2008, Skip started working as a gang interventionist with LAPD Lieutenant Michael Carradine. Carradine grew up in South LA and later became a beat cop there and went on to create the department's gang intervention program. He's slim and handsome with piercing green eyes. And that's how he got the nickname Green-Eyed Mike when he was a patrol cop. Today, he sometimes works with Skip out on the street.
And one of the things that Skip can do is he can go into a community. And because of the reputation that he has, you know, he can bring certain parties together to try to resolve any type of issues that they may have that may contribute to, say, a violent act or whatever the case may be.
Those violent acts that Skip tries to prevent can take place after a crime or at a neighborhood gathering, a funeral, for instance, or a vigil.
This is what I do.
On a Wednesday evening this past November, yeah, I met up with Skip at one of those vigils in a park in the West Adams neighborhood where he grew up. The gathering was in honor of a man who shot himself the week before. Skip stood in a prayer circle with a couple dozen people, many of them members of the Rolling 20s, the same gang that Skip used to be a member of.
Always we miss you, Gutter.
We miss you, Gutter.
We love you.
We love you.
All Jesus, amen.
Nice.
After the prayer, everyone scattered into smaller groups, started making plans for the evening. Kids rushed over to the playground. Skip stood off to the side, away from everyone, and looked out on the scene from under his hoodie. One reason he's here is to prevent any rival gangs from showing up to victimize the people at this vigil.
Because what happens times like this is they become a target.
they're a target for other communities that might want to come by and say, oh, you got a whole bunch of them at the park. And they creep up through the alleys or they'll come through here and start shooting.
Skip is also here in case law enforcement shows up. Even though he already let them know about the vigil, in this neighborhood, large gatherings like this often attract police.
Normally what they would do, see this many people in the park, they would come up and just like anybody else who want to violate this community would come up and come from two angles and kind of trap you in the park.
So you feel like part of your role is actually to protect people here from the police in a way?
I don't want to say protect people from the police, but I need to be that cushion between the police. The police, of course, know protocol and procedure, and the community doesn't know that protocol and procedures. So it's just a matter of being bilingual.
The other reason Skip is here is to try and get people to come to his classes.
Do my best to supply resources.
In his role as an interventionist, Skip often acts as a first responder to violent crimes. When someone has been shot in his community, he'll show up and work the crowd, try to find out why the shooting occurred so he can prevent a retaliatory killing. He often finds himself standing over the body of someone he knew or the child of a friend. And this type of work takes a toll on a person. One incident that happened a while back almost made Skip walk away from intervention work altogether.
Labor Day last year, 2014, there's a young man named James who has been shot in the head. He's deceased, and the community is in an uproar.
Skip did his best to calm everyone down, and then someone in the crowd got a phone call. It was from some of the younger members of the community who called to say that they had just gone out and gotten revenge for the killing of James.
And the older people in the group were high-fiving and, you know, like giving accolades to that. And I was just so sick to my stomach. And I was thinking, had I been there earlier, I could have maybe prevented it.
Several cars pulled up to the scene, and the kids who Skip believes had just gone out and committed the retaliatory killing got out and started celebrating.
And as I looked at the group, I didn't want to be around them and hang with them. And I looked over in the corner, and I seen another group that was smoking weed, and they were drinking hard liquor. And I was thinking to myself, if I stay here on this corner, I belong in that group. It's a group that is self-medicating because this reality is too harsh. And I'm not ready to go sit on a corner and smoke and drink all day simply because I can't deal with the issues that's going on.
So if you don't drink, what did you do to deal with that?
I just mask it. I just cover it up. I pretend like it doesn't bother me. And then it comes out months later, years later. It's bottled up emotion. So I talk it out to get it out as much as possible. That's why I'm sharing it now.
The other thing that helps Skip is working with people in the community who are trying to stop violence. People like Sister Lita Heron, a 69-year-old grandmother of six who co-hosts a radio show with Skip. She came to this work unexpectedly. In the 1980s, she was a typical mom trying to raise a family in South Central.
We're married, we have a home, we're trying to build a family, we were trying to live the American dream.
Lita, her husband, and their kids lived in a beautiful house that was built in 1909. Lita's husband had a good job at Lockheed Martin, and life was good. Until one day, nearly 30 years ago, a bullet came flying through their stained glass window.
Our first response was to duck, you know, and that's what we did.
The shootings kept happening, and slowly, Lita's fear turned into anger, and she could no longer duck and hide in fear.
I got angry, you know, as a mother. How dare you? Who are you? I want to see you. I want to know what you look like. I want to know what your car looks like. I want to know which way you came from and which way you left. So that's what drove me out to the front porch to have a look. So that's when I became a witness.
Tomorrow, we will air the story of Sister Lita Heron and her role in the struggle to end violence in Los Angeles in the third and final piece in this series. I'm David Weinberg for KCRW. This project is supported by a grant from the Conrad N. Hilton Foundation. You can find more about the series at belowthe10.com. That's T-E-N. There, you'll find tons of fantastic visual elements. There's videos and photos of some of the people in the series. There's interactive maps and beautiful illustrations. The series was reported and produced by me, David Weinberg, with Alexandra Garriton. It was edited by Sonia Geis and Nick White. And the digital team was run by Caitlin Schamberg. Thanks for listening.